Hello, this is Janet Gallen with Love Letters Live. And today's guest, we met each other about, what, 40 seconds ago?
Yes.
And we're going to have the fun of meeting him and getting to know him together. His name is Michael Steiner, and he is the founder of Diversity Entertainment. Mm-hmm. And let's just go to you and talk about you, because I know there's a lot to say. What is Diversity, and what prompted you to found it, and what do you do?
Diversity, founded it probably about 2 to 3 years ago. And if we go back a little further than that, it kind of started, the lead up to that started that I was going to be a basketball coach. And that's what I wanted to do. I was a high school basketball coach, then a college basketball coach. And then one off season, the other assistant coach at Long Beach City College brought me to a place, ARC Long Beach, it's a workshop, a covered workshop for people with disabilities.
Oh, developmental. Oh, I know that.
Yeah, ARC
well,
Long Beach.
Yes.
And we were just going to go there during the summertime to play softball with the clients there and that kind of thing. And during that time, I knew that, you know, maybe that I wasn't going to be a basketball coach the rest of my life. It was something that
What made that shift in you?
You know, there was a shift in the players themselves.
Oh.
From kind of old school, where the players had respect for the game and for the coaches. And then my last year coaching, it seemed to there's where the shift came from. And I wasn't sure that I wanted to go along with the change that I felt that was going to happen. So while just trying to decide what else that I would want to do, I got this bug that sometimes people get, this acting bug.
Oh, good for you.
And so I thought, well, you know what, I think maybe I can act.
And that just hit you as an adult? You didn't have like some pull as a child towards
No,
it?
No, none at all. I mean, coaching basketball, playing basketball first, then coaching was my passion. So I thought, this weird idea of becoming an actor. And so I found somebody to kind of represent me, if you will, back in the day. We're talking about the 80s and the middle 80s. And I went on an audition, and I'll never forget this. That's when I found out I couldn't act.
Couldn't. Oh, bad news.
First audition, I think it was something like it was a hair commercial or something. And I was in there with like 4 or 5 people sitting at a desk, and they said, okay, Mike, we want you to act like you're at a dog race with your girlfriend, and we want you to get excited about the race. So I thought, really? Is this what acting is?
So had they given you something you could have cared about?
Maybe. I didn't care about dog racing. And then, so I think I did something in there, but I just remembered, like, I wanted to get out of the room as quickly as possible. And then I knew going home on my drive home, this isn't for me. And then to make kind of a long story short, I ended up meeting a guy who was a producer and ended up becoming friends with him. And he ended up producing a lower budget film. And I kind of thought,
can you say what it was?
It's called My Brother's Keeper, the film.
Okay.
I think it went right to video back then in the 80s. And you know what? I kind of knew once I got behind the camera and started, as a production assistant, but and I had a little bit to do with casting of the film. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I loved the creativity. I just loved the whole thing about producing and coming up with a project and seeing it through from start to finish, concept to getting it done.
Do you have a specialty in what kinds of things you like to produce? Do you have a general theme, or are you open to everything, or what?
Well, going back to kind of the story, how I got up to it, when I went to ARC Long Beach, I ended up, I knew that somehow that's what kind of I was good at, working with people. And so at some point, I wanted to kind of bring the two together. And I knew that people with disability were underserved in the entertainment business. And
in terms of being cast for roles?
Cast, in all aspects, uh-huh. Whether it's in front or behind the camera, especially in front. They say there's less than 1% of people with disabilities that are represented in the entertainment industry, in front of and behind the camera. And so as I kind of went forward, I knew that that was an issue. I knew that kind of maybe that's where I was supposed to go. Because I, you know, up to this point, I've had over 35 years of working with people with disabilities.
Oh, so that and was well ago.
Yeah, and it's been kind of the last job I had before I kind of went into business myself. I was an independent living skills instructor. And
can you just define what that is for so
people? It means people with developmental disabilities mm-hmm. that needed some help with everyday stuff, mm-hmm. Whether it's going to the bank, living on your own, and the things that are needed if you're going to live on your own.
So teaching people the specifics of how to do this.
Absolutely.
Oh, nice.
And that was fun. That was I loved it. Absolutely loved it. So it just so happened the last kind of real job that I had in that area, I kind of founded a social club for people with developmental disabilities. And we put together, a friend of mine was a musician who worked with me, and we put together a band. And this band, everybody in the band had some level of disability. Well, we kind of got the band together just to see if we could play one song mm-hmm. and go with it. Well, that turned into, we got a gig right away with the regional centers in front of like 400 people. And we knew three songs. So we did that. That worked out well, and it developed from there. And from there, we started doing bigger. We got better, started doing bigger shows. And then from there, it ended up, we were the first band of its kind to ever tour China.
My goodness.
So in 06, we got the opportunity to go to China, and that was just, we got to play on the Great Wall. We played at Fudan University, which is China's biggest university. And then we came back, and with that momentum a little bit, we got to open up at the Canyon Club for Jay Leno. And so we got to do some really cool stuff. But like anything else, that kind of, it runs its course, and mm-hmm. then you move on. So that's kind of how the whole entertainment thing started. So, you know, I managed that band for 7 years and then got the opportunity to do a radio show and produce a radio show.
Oh, I never, that's what you mentioned, the radio, yes.
I never, you know, produced a radio
what
show
was the
before.
Theme of it?
Well, it was a talk show, and it was some pretty established performers in just in entertainment in general, but all the performers had a disability.
Uh-huh.
You know, Kathy Buckley is hearing impaired.
So she did one with me. Yes.
Oh, yeah. She's just turned
very
into
funny.
A real close friend,
yeah.
and she's wonderful. And have learned a lot from Kathy. Jerry Jewell.
Also, yeah.
Was
yeah.
one of our hosts. And then Tobias Forrest.
Oh, I love him. So we know a lot of the same people
yes,
by now.
Yes,
I love him.
And so we took those three and we did this show.
So was he part of the band?
No.
Okay.
No, he's got his own bad
yes,
citizen.
Yes, I knew that. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
But no, we just, I called Toby one day and just said, yeah, I want to do a radio show. Just, you uh-huh. know, something let's do. And he suggested Kathy Buckley. I said, you know, I knew Kathy 10 years ago, but I'd lost touch. So I got reacquainted with Kathy, and then he said, well, if you're going to have Kathy, you got to have Jerry. So it all kind of came together. We found a sponsor to get us on this Healthy Life Net, I believe it was called back then, because mm-hmm. This was about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the show there, did it for a year, and then we just kind of moved on. And then Jerry called me up one day and said, hey, there's this other station I think we could do well at. And I said, well, that's great.
Was it internet? Was it radio?
Yeah, it was internet radio.
Uh-huh.
And then we, a guy named Mark Povinelli. Of course. You know, I'm going to mention everybody, and you're going to know everybody. And so I said, well, with the new show, I really like what Mark has to say. Let's get Mark as a regular host. So we did, and we asked Mark. He said, yeah. So we had all four of them at
Oh, that's funny. I have a picture of Mark at a radio station when he was – and I didn't know. Now I know it was yours.
Yeah, at LA uh-huh, Talk uh-huh. is where we had it for about a year.
You live long enough, all the threads in your life come together.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just ran into Michael Golden in the radio
room. Right.
So yeah, there's certainly a group of us that have known each other for a long time, and, you know, we all have the same – you know, aspirations is just...
Sure. So, but now diversity, that's something that you're still doing.
Yeah.
So,
you know what?
What do you do as head of that?
Well, you know, diversity started out as we wanted to represent talent who just great talent.
Oh, so like agent or casting?
first.
Uh-huh.
And we just wanted to start representing the underserved, if you will, lack for a better choice of words.
Sure.
And so we got some great clientele, with the four people and that I mentioned to you and some other wonderful talent. And then kind of right when that happened, you know, I got the wonderful news that I got cancer.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, of course.
So, I got throat cancer, and it was what I had learned it was stage four.
Oh, my goodness.
So that that's not fun to hear. So
was that just from a regular checkup, or you'd been having pain, or swallowing, or
it was one of those things. At the end of 2012, I woke up with a big old lump in my throat.
Oh, okay.
That
so
was kind of it. No pain,
obvious. Yeah.
No, nothing. So that's a story in itself if you want to talk about later. But
I think it's important to know how people find things so people know what to be aware of.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
That's the only reason I'm asking.
Yeah, no, I have, gosh, no problem. Sometimes my train of thought goes in different areas.
I like those tracks. Okay.
But you're the pro, so you can bring me right back to what I need to go back at. So it's I woke up one day. I believe it was like October, around the fall of 2012, with this lump. Wild things go through your mind when
sure.
you wake up with a golf ball-sized lump in your throat. And I didn't have health insurance. I'd always been extremely healthy my whole life and did not have health insurance. I waited for a while to see if it would go away. It never did. And a wonderful friend of mine, April's, you need to get it checked. So she actually found me a place to go get it checked. So, around the first of 2013... found a place, they checked and said, let's keep an eye on it. So for like a year, it would kind of go down a little bit, but then it would puff up and then go down. So after a year, it just wasn't going away. And then the good thing was that in 2014, Obamacare kicked in.
Oh.
So I could get the health insurance.
Yeah, okay.
And, got a doctor, and he said, this doesn't look good. Let's get a CT scan going. And we did, and called me on a Sunday. I can never forget that, and said that we're suspecting it's cancer, but we need to get you some tests. And, of course, you get that news, on the phone that the doctor on a Sunday has to call you. You know, it's kind of serious. So for about 20 minutes, I felt sorry for myself.
I was going to ask, do you live alone?
Yeah.
So there was nobody to run screaming to or something?
No. I've never been the screaming type regardless.
Yeah, I can see that in your face. Yes.
So for about 20 minutes, you get that word, and that word means is so powerful. And after 20 minutes of, I don't know if I cried, but I certainly, that was emotional.
Oh, yeah.
And then after that, I just embraced it after 20 minutes and totally embraced what it was. And that I just decided I was going to go forward regardless of what it was and how it's all going to turn out. And that, I think, is the best decision I'd ever made in my life. And then you just take every step as it comes. Then they did a biopsy, and it proved positive that it was cancer. And the tumor was about 6 millimeters. So for that year, I didn't do anything. It had been growing inside.
Mm-hmm.
But it never hurt. Then all of a sudden, your ear starts hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were doing the one radio show, I couldn't even put the headsets on because it would hurt.
So sensitive.
But then it would go away, mm-hmm. and it would come back. So, I'm going. I'm the internet doctor. So I'm going all over the internet to find out, what needs to be done and stuff. So,
it was a long time between detection and surgery. Then you're saying.
I never had surgery.
Oh, radiation.
The course of action was, I went through the three cycles of pretty aggressive chemotherapy.
Oh.
Then after that, right into 6 weeks, 5 days a week of radiation. And then I got to experience the wonderful world of brachytherapy.
Of what?
Brachytherapy. Brachytherapy is, I had to go in the hospital for 4 days. And what did they do is they surgically put in 12 catheters. Surgically into your throat. And then twice a day for 4 days, I have to go into the radiation department, and they put these radioactive seeds through the catheter into the direct location of the original tumor. And so that's twice a day for 4 days. And, you know, the recovery from that isn't fun. You know, you from the radiation to that, the brachytherapy, you lose your ability to talk. You had to get a tracheostomy, so you have a big hole in your throat. For everything else that happens, I got a real bad infection from the hospital. It was that flesh-eating infection.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. But you know what? The antibiotics that they gave me worked really well on it. So within a few weeks, it went away pretty good. And then the hole kind of heals on its own. But, you know, I have great amnesia. I'm great at forgetting what happened the next day and moving on.
Good.
So every day, you know, that they had warned me that, Vicodin was my best friend during that time. Because he said, you know, it's going to feel like there's 10 knives going in your throat from all this. So,
oh, you mean even after they took out the
Just the recovery part afterwards. So, you know, I'd get up. I slept great, but in the middle of the night after the Vicodin wears off, you know, you couldn't even swallow. So you had I would run to get the, and I couldn't swallow pills. I couldn't even eat. So you dissolve the pill and drink it, and it'd take about 5 minutes, but you try not to even breathe. And then, boom, it kicked in right away, and I could go to sleep, and I was fine.
You have an amazing spirit. I'm staring at you, my mouth's open.
Well, you know what?
It's just in awe of your attitude and how you...
We have no choice when these things, these challenges. Everybody goes through challenges in their life.
For sure. And people do them in different ways, though.
You're right. But I know with the cancer, they had told me in the beginning, even though it was stage 4, typically this kind of cancer, if it's going to spread, it goes to your lungs. And they kind of knew from the PET scans in between the chemo and the radiation that it didn't go in my lungs. And not to say I was out of the woods, but the prognosis was pretty good.
Now, how long ago was this?
I finished all my treatments almost exactly a year ago, a little over a year ago.
Okay, so you've had a year...
To recover.
Yeah.
I'd lost 80 pounds.
Wow.
I had, obviously, I had a kind of, I couldn't talk for a while, and those kind of things. So I figure 2015 was my year to recover from it.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I got to go back to the gym about 7 months ago. I'm as strong as I've ever been.
Well, I'm going to say, to look at you, if you hadn't told me all this, there would be no way of knowing that you were sick.
Well, again,
you're lucky to be a good-looking man, but you also look healthy, and you don't look like you've lost 80. I mean, you look good.
I started at 230, went down at my lowest to 150, and I was probably within a week or less of them putting a feeding tube in, because I just, with the radiation, you don't eat.
Right.
Because... everything, even watching a food commercial on TV, was kind of just vile.
Oh.
Yeah. It was like, I tell people, take the worst thing in the world that you can put in your mouth and have to chew and swallow. That's how all food looked to me. And so it was really tough. And then the radiation, I could only drink inshore.
Mm.
So they were getting ready to put a feeding tube in, but I was bound not to do that.
Oh, so you didn't have to have it?
No. I was about a week away, because if I got below 150,
I see.
They were going to do it.
Yes.
But my friend April just kept putting insure in front of me and saying, just take 2 sips for now. And I got to give her so much credit.
Okay.
Because, I moved in with her for a couple of weeks, and she was great. And between her and my sister Sharon, who actually is now part of Diverse City, they were...
So you're back at work in Diverse City now.
Yeah, we have a couple of shows now that we're...
Oh, can you tell us about them?
Yeah, we have, and I think you're very aware of, again, probably our host, I would imagine. But our first show that we started right before the cancer treatment was Listen Up with C.J. Jones. I don't know if you're familiar with C.J. Jones.
No.
C.J. is a rock star in the deaf world, around the world. And he's a comedian, an entertainer, an actor.
Oh, I've read about him.
Yes, yes.
Yes, I have not met him. Okay.
He's just one of the greatest entertainers I've ever met in my life, period. Forget that he's deaf. That makes no difference at all. And so we kind of have a talk show that we've put together with CJ and a guy named Bob Hilterman.
That, where do we see this?
Well, we're in pre-production right now.
Oh, okay.
So we've been rehearsing for a little over a year, and then again I got sidetracked with the other thing, with the cancer. And so we just kind of, this year, even starting at the end of last year, we started getting back on track and rehearsing and putting everything together. You know, you got to put your business plans together and all that stuff. So we have that we're at a point now where we're just starting to look for sponsors for that show. You know, we shot a promo
for that it. Daunting, looking for sponsors?
You know, we haven't kind of dove into that yet, but I don't feel that it will be.
Oh, good.
I feel with CJ and with Bob, both can consider themselves.
By the way, you can see that I've got the memory of a cabbage. Asking you if that would be daunted, because a few seconds ago you were not daunted by this whole cancer. So, of course, looking for a few sponsors would be...
Oh, that's a piece of cake.
Yes.
Everything else in life is a piece
me.
Of cake.
Okay.
Right? So, no, I think with CJ, because he's so well known in the deaf community worldwide, and there's so many companies that know him, I just don't think it's going to be... I mean, I hate to say this as a producer that don't want to make light that you got to have money to do the show, but we got a great studio, Universal Broadcasting Network, and that's cool because the studio's at the old Columbia Building, Sunset and Gower Studio.
So you're established, and you've got people on your side. It's not like you're starting
right.
this in a vacuum. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
We've got an amazing group. We have a guy named Dennis Turner is our production advisor who was... I think is one of the best cameramen in the world. I mean, he did all of Norman Lear's shows. He did Married with Children. He, for
so
5 years,
yes,
the
okay.
Tonight Show before Jay retired. And so he's our production advisor, and he's great. So we've got my sister Sharon, speaking of radio, she was an associate producer for Rick D's show back in the 80s and for Casey Kasem. So she has a lot of experience,
okay.
and she's been so valuable.
So you're all good hands all the way around.
Absolutely.
Oh, this is not, okay.
Yeah, everybody I get surrounding knows way more than I do. So it's always seems to be a logical
smart
thing
of you.
To do.
Yes. And as you're working on this, do you have your eye on yet other things to do? I mean, do you have a head full of?
Absolutely. We want to do a number of shows, and the other show that we're actually in rehearsals for right now is Roll with the Punches, with Robert Romani, who you know.
Oh yes, of course.
And the wonderful Audie Angel. Are
yes.
you familiar with Audie?
Very.
Yeah. She's a push
yes.
girl.
Yes.
Those two, as a lot of people thought it was kind of, they didn't get the combination, but after rehearsals and everything,
well, I would think
it's perfect.
The combination, I mean, that would be just fierce energy and music.
Absolutely. Amazing. And again, it's hard to tell what kind of show that is. And when I say it's a talk show, and it's going to be a TV, it's an internet show, so it's not just radio. It is, there's cameras, there's, mm-hmm. and all that, so... we're looking forward to those two are the ones we're actively in production.
And, of course, working internet now,
right.
you're not limited by time or distance,
right?
Which is wonderful.
Oh, especially with both with CJ on the one
yes.
show and Audie with the other. They've got, you know, really
their
big
following. That's right. Well, you know, I was amazed just even from this that I would get responses from Guam.
Right.
For
right.
example. And, you know, the Saudi Arabia. I mean... There's no such thing as being limited by borders anymore.
No, there isn't.
Which is lovely.
And it's certainly where everything's going, and I'm not sure that it hasn't arrived. I think internet entertainment,
yeah.
You know, certainly the two shows that I've talked about, it'd be great to go to somebody like Amazon or Netflix or some of those, Hulu, and do original shows with
yes.
those.
Yes, good for
and,
you.
So that's kind of where our...
I saw it for the first time yesterday. Which always amazes me because I think I'm just like the hippest person in the world. No. A smart TV.
Right.
And it is covered, the screen is covered with so many outlets and doors to different, you know, like Hulu and Vudu and
everything's
Amazon.
Apps. They're
well,
all apps.
That, but also, yes, by the time, there is the issue of, I was saying to her, by the time you go through all this to decide on what you want to see... It is time to get up for work the next morning.
Right, right.
That's the only downside.
Hey, I'm male. There's way too many choices in the world. I like it when there's like two choices.
Oh, me too.
And that's it.
I say that. Like, go to the drugstore for a shampoo. There are 45 different kinds.
Right.
And I need the little communist drugstore that gives you the state-run thing and maybe one other.
Right.
Yes, it's right. We're lucky.
I have cable TV.
Yes.
And so you have all these channels to choose from, yet I'm kind of still stuck old school in, okay, there's NBC, there's ABC, and then there's CBS.
Yes.
Oh, maybe Fox.
Yes.
It's just choices.
And it used to be. It was channel 2, 4, 5, 7, or 9, or 13 right. in L.A. when right. I was a girl.
Right.
And that was, but this is much better.
It is. I mean, I kind of like the political shows and stuff. So, choices. Choices are tough sometimes.
Do you have any intention of getting, like, a YouTube channel?
Yeah, we're going to set up our...
Is that just such an old-school question already that I shouldn't be asking it?
No. We're going to go through the whole, everything, social media. Is just so important.
Yes.
You have to.
Yes.
You know, I kind of mastered Facebook, but, you know, and then just recently I started with Instagram and Twitter.
Okay, well, I'll find you on Twitter and let's...
Well, but I don't... Yes. That's the problem.
Oh.
I've kind of abandoned those. They're still up. Yeah. I don't think I've posted in Instagram or Twitter in probably 3 months. I Facebook every day.
Yes.
And it's wonderful for networking
it's
and
great,
promoting
but it,
shows.
But it is all time-consuming.
And now there's more. There's right. there's so Periscope and all that stuff.
Yeah. So let's move for a second,
sure,
because it is something that I love, to the simpler way of living, letters. Do you write letters? Have you ever?
You know, I wasn't.
Get them?
No, I can honestly say that letters have never been. Do I throw somebody a... a text every once in a while and things like that. Of course.
Of course, you know, you can't reread a text. I mean, you can for a while. But if you were to write an actual letter, a love letter to somebody right now, who would it be to?
Wow.
And, of course, I like to say I'm not the love letter police. It's your business. But I do have two already that I would be writing to.
There's certainly two people that have been very important in my life. And, you know, I was actually... four.
Say their names out loud?
Certainly my father, who I was estranged from for 26 years, who I'm now, he lives in Phoenix area, and I'm certainly going back and forth. So we have a great relationship.
Oh, that's so nice.
And my stepmother, Royce. But certainly if I had to connect to the recent stuff with the cancer and everything, certainly my sister Sharon and my friend April.
Yes. Now, I'm a letter to them. A love letter to them will mean the world. Something in your handwriting that they can pick up for the rest of their lives and remember what they were to someone they loved.
Oh, sure.
Oh, my goodness. I hope you do.
And emails don't work with stuff like that.
I love them. I'm just totally addicted, so I would be right. The last thing. But, you know, it's different than finding a gift on top of your mail pile.
Right.
Something personal. And it just makes you skip a heartbeat.
It does. You get excited. I remember the day, you know, you'd get excited receiving a letter, just any kind of handwritten letter.
That's right. And you know your friend's handwriting, so right away you know something's come. Oh, I hope you do it. And
you know,
it doesn't even have to be long, but just a couple of specifics about how they enriched, changed, and saved your life.
Yeah, I have a wonderful friend, Carolyn, in Fresno, who does that a lot. She, just for birthdays or whatever, she goes out and buys a card. She writes a big letter in the card and sends it to me every year.
Yes.
And for holidays.
Yes.
So you're right.
And by the way, I look at the historical view, looking down the line. You've started a wonderful company here. You're doing important work in the entertainment industry. How nice for somebody in 100 years to find a letter to you in somebody's handwriting or from you in somebody's handwriting.
I couldn't agree with you more.
You know, if you were to find a letter right now from Cecil B. DeMille in some old box, wouldn't you be just thrilled and running to the New York Times? Look what I got.
Oh, you go on eBay with it, right?
That too.
That's what everybody
that
does.
That too,
right?
Yes.
But no, there's old school. There's something to say about all that. I mean, we all of our generations do that. But there's certainly something to say about now letter writing is like phone calls instead of texting, instead of emails. I'm still a huge, huge believer. And, you know, some of the friends, you call, and it's like, you know, you could have texted that. And I said, no, but calling is better.
Oh, well, that's nice. You know, I heard from somebody a while ago that it's now considered rude to make a phone call.
Some people treat it that way.
Because you're somebody's always doing something, that you're interrupting something. And lots of times it's joyfully because they get to hear your voice.
Right.
But a letter interrupts nothing.
it's phone calling. I have to go back to just a second to April because she's a caller. She doesn't do text. She'll do text for quick informational kind of things. But when she calls, I'll sit there and go, okay, I know I have to have a certain amount of time to take her call. Right. Same with Robert Romani. Robert, if you're listening, it's the same thing with Robert. If you're going to take a call from Robert, and I love Robert to death, but you have to have a certain amount of time.
Yes. But there is something, you know, there's something about heat, warmth comes through.
Absolutely.
That's important. You know, I just realized the other day, congregating is a human need.
Right. Oh, without a doubt.
And feel and more senses than just...
And certainly we're kind of, as a society, getting away from that. But everything's full circle.
Yes.
Just like you can go buy albums again.
I heard that.
Vinyl, yeah.
And I heard Amazon is doing a bricks and mortar store.
Right.
Yes. I mean, that's just kind of a shocker, but people want to feel each other. They want to feel presence.
Well, it's like reading a book.
Yes.
I cannot read a book on my tablet. I have to hold the book in my hand.
Yeah.
And I'm a reader, I agree with you. It'll come full circle.
Okay, well, I hope you do a couple of letters because I can just imagine what it would be like to get one from you.
I have to now.
Yes, you do. And if you ever care to come back and read one or come back and share anything, let me know.
I would love to.
I want to thank you for doing this. It's just such a pleasure getting to know you. And
well, thank you, Janet. This has been a great experience.
Thank you. Well, until next time, I just want to remind you that every life, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, every day has the seeds of a love letter in it to somebody. So if you take a minute and just stamp it and mail it, you'll make somebody else's life richer. And the truth is, you make yours the same. Thank you, honey, for doing this. Until next time, Janet Gallen saying goodbye.